You're with us for the morning show as we spend the hour on President Trump's legal troubles and what the future holds after he leaves office. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Since our country's founding, not a single former president has been indicted for a crime. But over the 4 years, civil and criminal cases have emerged and could follow President Trump out of the White House. Do you think he's broken laws in office, or do you dismiss those accusations as a political witch hunt like the president does? Would you pardon President Trump? And by the way, could the president pardon himself? Let's get your take, 800-642-1234. Jeff Wise has written for Vanity Fair, New York Magazine, and Business Week, among other outlets. His most recent book is called The Taking of MH370. Jeff, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you have been talking with prosecutors, you've been talking with legal scholars about the legal liability President Trump faces after office. What is the consensus you're finding?
Right. So I did an article for New York Magazine on this topic, and the consensus is that there's plenty of legal basis for prosecuting him, both in federal and in state jurisdictions. And there isn't a clear consensus on how exactly that will play out or how it should play out.
Well, since last year, Manhattan's district attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. has been investigating President Trump's finances. There's been some eyes on what this particular DA would do. What do you see there?
Right. So as a result of the Mueller investigation, of course, Robert Mueller famously decided that he would honor the Department of Justice internal memo that said that a sitting president can't be prosecuted by the Department of Justice. But in the course of his investigation, did turn up things that resulted in a prosecution of other people, including the president's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen. And in the course of that investigation, it emerged that Trump had basically paid off Stormy Daniels right before the 2016 election. And Michael Cohen wound up being convicted. And the president was sort of named as an unindicted co-conspirator. And basically from that, that spurred an investigation by the Manhattan DA, as you just mentioned. And that process is underway. It's been tied up in courts. Trump is very famous for litigating, suing, throwing up every kind of legal obstacle that he can. And as president, there's a lot of legal levers that he can pull. In this case, he's basically sued to prevent the Manhattan District Attorney from obtaining financial records from Trump's accountant, a company called Mazars. And that has been this is very typical for Donald Trump, where he basically makes a baseless or really spurious legal claim, and it gets thrown out, but then he appeals it, gets, you know, it fails on appeal, but then goes to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court says no, but sends it back to the lower court. The team tries something else. And so it's basically he's been unsuccessful in that none of these rulings have gone his way, but the mere process of running these legal challenges has run down the clock.
Like a legal churn, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And this is he's been doing this really his whole career. And it's one of the great things about being rich in this country is if you have a team of fancy lawyers, they can just, you know, you don't have to pay a contractor because you say, listen, I'm going to pay you 20 cents on the dollar. And if you don't like it, we'll go to court and we'll spend the next 10 years litigating and it'll cost you a fortune. And you'll probably, who knows what will happen, but you won't get paid till, you know, 10 years down the road and you'll have had to front an enormous amount of money in the meantime. So ultimately, you know, he's benefited from, if you're the richest person in a legal dispute, you can kind of win just by outspending and outweighing your opponent. But if you get into a situation where the government is coming after you, then it sort of scales tilt the other way.
Has he benefited from presidential immunity? And how does that immunity work while in the Oval Office?
Well, he has definitely pushed the concept of presidential immunity infinitely further than anyone else has ever attempted to do. I mean, Nixon definitely made claims, and others have since. But Trump has really taken a lot further. His claims that, you know, nothing he does. His lawyers essentially said he can do whatever he wants. His claim is that he can do whatever he wants while he's president. His lawyers identified him as basically being equivalent to the entire executive branch, and therefore, you know, has all of the rights and obligations and duties and honors of the entire branch on him. So no one can touch him. Now, that hasn't stood up in court. Again, he keeps losing, but then he can appeal, and the process just gets drawn out and drawn out. And meanwhile, he's been salting the judiciary with his appointees so that he gets sometimes very favorable rulings, which then get ultimately overturned. But so basically you ask, what is the nature of immunity? He would claim it's like absolute, like nothing that he does is reviewable. That's not how most lawyers would interpret it. But, you know, we're in this era in which kind of all bets are off. And you know, the president of the United States can make really sweeping claims about his power. And, you know, might makes right. If he succeeds, then he's right. He has basically established what the new norm is.
Jeff Wise, journalist who's been writing about the possibility that President Trump could be charged with crimes after he leaves office. We're exploring this with you at 800-642-1234. Let's get a take now from Dave in Appleton. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. You know, rich people don't go to jail. Trump's not going to go to jail for anything he's ever done. I think it's a huge waste of money. I think you should just let him fade off into the sunset in Florida on the golf course. Leave the man alone. We've had lunatic presidents before that, I love history. I read a lot about different presidents. We've had Trump is probably the most loony one we've ever had. But the more you poke him, the more he loves it. And you just got to leave him alone. I mean, just let it go.
All right.
Because he's been attacked. You know, just let him go.
Dave, thank you for the call. And so Dave coming down on the side of, you know, move on, don't investigate, don't provoke.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an argument that a lot of people make, including some of the people I talk to. It would be easy to be sure, and this is essentially what Obama did with regards to the Bush administration before him. There had been allegations, of torture and human rights violations, and the idea was just, you know what, let's turn the page. Some people argue that set the stage for what we have now, where if you don't have rules, or if you have rules that are by mutual agreement not going to be enforced, that essentially gives the person in the Oval Office complete free rein to do whatever they want. They essentially have king-like powers, and that is the new norm. I mean, if we just sort of turn the page and don't, litigate, reinvestigate, have a debate about what happened in the last 4 years. Essentially, the dial is left where Trump put it.
Well, and Dave is making the assumption that President Trump would, and using Dave's word here, fade off into the sunset. But,
right. Well, he has a hammer lock on the Republican Party right now. And the claims that he's making now were essentially a Democratic election is not valid unless it elects him. For his opponent to be elected is invalid. That is essentially North Korea. I mean, that is not a democratic society anymore. And, you know, this idea about, oh, we shouldn't prosecute a former president. The Republican Party has tried very vigorously to prosecute Joe Biden, Barack Obama, Hunter Biden, you know, Hillary Clinton. Like, he wants to prosecute people. And so if Tucker Carlson comes in as a president in 2024, there will be no restraints unless we establish restraints in the next 4 years.
And we have to pause there with journalist Jeff Wise, our guide, as we look at President Trump's legal battles. We will be back, talk more in just a minute. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're discussing President Trump's legal troubles and what happens when the protections afforded a sitting president go away in January. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. President Trump has refused to concede. He's paid for a recount in two counties here in Wisconsin, Dane and Milwaukee. grand jury investigation by the Manhattan District Attorney into the president's family business practices and his tax returns, that looms large. Is this a politically motivated fishing expedition, or does the country have an obligation to investigate the president to uphold trust in government? Join in with your take, 800-642-1234. Journalist Jeff Wise has been reporting on President Trump's legal issues, and he's with us for the hour. Let's bring in Ray in Janesville with thoughts on this. Ray, hi.
Good morning to you. Hey, I strongly got to disagree with Dave. I mean, for me, it's obvious him and his family have gained so much money using the president's office. But I also like to throw out there that, I mean, with the virus, I mean, he knew about it. He never said anything about it to anybody for a month or 2 months. I mean, the people that passed away and actually get the virus, one would almost think that he's almost liable for all that, right?
All right, Ray, I want to ask the question here back to Jeff. Your first point, the accusations that President Trump is profiting from the presidency, what do you find there?
You know, there's a lot of things that a president can do that are kind of morally abhorrent but aren't illegal. And profiting, you know, benefiting himself, like going to his golf courses constantly, charging exorbitant rates to the Secret Service detail that has to stay with him. It seems really wrong, but it's not probably prosecutable. I mean, an attorney general could try to make the case, but. So, as to the issue of, well, he's basically lied to the people, admittedly lied to the people about the danger of COVID, has encouraged people to ignore health officials' advice, has, you know, very plausibly can make the case that he has caused tens or hundreds of thousands of deaths. But I think that would be a hard case to prosecute. There are other things that are much more plainly criminal that I think would go first.
How can you prosecute accusations that the president is profiting, you know, per the emoluments clauses of the Constitution? This is illegal.
Right. So there is an emoluments clause, which in gist says that an official is not supposed to use his office for personal benefit. More specifically, isn't supposed to be paid by foreign governments. But there isn't any legal underpinning to that. Like, there's no penalties that are described. So it turns out to be really hard. Now, should that be amended going forward? You know, a recurring theme of this presidency is things have happened that no one anticipated could happen. You know, we up until now, there have been, even the worst presidents have abided by certain norms, such as, you know, once you lose, you admit that you lost and you pave the way for a transition to your successor. All those things are, that and so many other things have just gone out the window. So we have a lot of assumptions as a democracy about how things will work that turn out not to be true. And one might hope that no one like Donald Trump will ever come to office again. But given that he remains incredibly popular in the Republican Party, given that he's sort of served as a model for what can be done, frankly, the Republican Party hasn't suffered a lot of negative consequences for some of the norms that it's violated. So there's no reason to really think that if he isn't prosecuted, that future you know, people who follow in his footsteps will be better.
We're talking with Jeff Wise, journalist who's been writing about the legal troubles President Trump faces once he leaves office. You can join in with your questions, what you're watching for, 800-642-1234. We have a question here. Are citizens paying for this litigation or prosecution? How much would this cost the American people?
Well, yeah, of course, taxpayers, you know, pay for the judicial branch like they pay for the other two branches. Maintaining a government is part of what being a country is. And, you know, a threat to its continued existence is definitely something that probably should be regarded as a priority. We pay billions and trillions of dollars to the Defense Department to protect us from military attack. Presumably, we should allocate some funds for defending the legal underpinnings of our society.
Let's bring in Jim in River Falls. Jim, what are you thinking?
Hi. Well, I think it's kind of, I mean, it's an egregious example of the idea of the unit. I think it's unitary presidency, which Rumsfeld and Alito and, you know, the Bush administration pushed, where, yeah, the president can do anything he wants, almost like a king, and anything he does is legal. I think the citizens of the country really are the ones that are hurt by this, because if you have criminals in elected office, I mean, they should be held accountable to the same standards that, you know, everyday citizens are. And I mean, he's just pushing this to the extreme. And somebody with a little bit more abilities in the office, I think, wouldn't have lost the election. He's just, you know, such a buffoon, and some of his egregious actions had turned the electorate off to him, and he lost the election this time. But that's not to say that somebody with better political skills couldn't have held on and, you know, really become king-like in their abilities in the United States here.
So, Jim, bringing up the unitary aspect of the presidency, and is that an issue, do you see, Jeff, as we have seen through President Trump's administration?
Yeah, no, I think Jim makes a really good point, something I tried to raise earlier. Essentially, as we know what the Constitution supposedly says about the, you know, separation of powers. But the way that the needle is set right now, the norms that have been established by the president, is now that the president of the United States is essentially a monarch. A president's powers can't be reviewed by anybody at this point. So that is a dangerous position to be in if you are a democracy. So I would agree with Jim that this is like a pretty urgent matter to be addressed. Like, we have a very limited amount of time. If Joe Biden doesn't get the Senate on his side, it's really scary, because it's hard to see how he will manage to affect any kind of change at a legislative level that would address, you know, overreach by the executive branch to essentially grant itself unlimited powers. You know, I would also raise another point, which is that one of the advantages of a criminal prosecution that results in a conviction is that it would really send a clear signal to the American public. As you know, right now, we are awash with misinformation and lies that are being, you know, promulgated by the president, of course, and his allies, but also by a big section of the media who are saying, I just saw this statistic that something like 3/4 of Republicans believe that Joe Biden fraudulently won the election. This is a really, really dangerous place for democracy to be in, to have a huge portion of its population living in an alternate reality in which in which faith in the system is relentlessly undermined.
I want to look at pardons here for a moment. A pardon implies a grant of mercy to another. Will we see a pardon here with President-elect Biden, or could Trump pardon himself?
That's a great question, and one that is really in a lot of people's minds right now. We all think about Gerald Ford pardoning Richard Nixon and how that basically turned the page. And, you know, for a long time after that, a lot of people thought, well, you know, that was good. This sort of national healing began. But you could also – a lot of people look at it – Roger Stone was, like, famously a big Nixon fan and, you know, went on to become a big player in the Trump administration. It's now a lot of people feel like that was a terrible mistake, because it said, you know, if you commit crimes, we'll let you go. And so the crimes that were committed were increasingly severe. You know, you had Iran-Contra under the Reagan administration and so on. And then a lot of the falsification of intelligence under the Bush administration that led us into the Iraq War. The more you let people get away with bad behavior, the more you effectively encourage that bad behavior. So if we repeat what Gerald Ford did to Nixon, you would be basically letting somebody off the hook, having committed even, you know, several stages more severe crimes. So Biden has said that he will not pardon Trump. More recently, he's used sort of softer language He said he won't. He doesn't want to get involved. If it was up to him, he wouldn't prosecute. But it's not up to him. He will let his attorney general do what they say see fit. I think that there's within the Democratic Party a strong desire to see justice done. Now, the issue of self-pardon, we just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, based on this idea that Trump will litigate any possible angle he can, I could very easily imagine him trying to give himself a self-pardon. And then if he faces prosecution at a federal level, using that self-pardon to contest it.
We have journalist Jeff Weiss as we dig into the legal jeopardy that President Trump could face once he leaves office. Would a criminal investigation into President Trump's actions further polarize our divided nation, or is it necessary to ensure our leaders are held accountable? Do you have faith and trust in government? What is that like now? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Jeff Weiss after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Could President Trump be indicted after January 20th? We're discussing whether you think he will face criminal consequences for his actions after he leaves the White House. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President Trump has denied wrongdoing, and he routinely dismisses the investigations against him as hoaxes or witch hunts. Jeff Weiss's reporting on the president's legal investigations appear in New York Magazine and other outlets, and he's with us for the hour. Let's bring in Julie in Appleton. Hi, Julie.
Good morning. Just a question about Twitter. I'm curious what the speaker has his opinion on should Trump continue to have a Twitter account given all the false information he's handing out, especially on the election? And secondly, can his Twitter account be used in any legal proceedings should there be any in the future?
Julie, thanks.
Great questions. Recently Twitter has started to append these tags to his tweets saying he'll say I won, and then it'll say this is disputed or something. It's fairly weak beer given the megaphone that he has and the authority that he has as President of the United States. Twitter has said that when he leaves office on January 20th, he will be no longer the President of the United States. He will be an ordinary citizen, and he will not be given the latitude that heads of state are generally given. These are just sort of internal rules that Twitter has kind of cooked up in the process of figuring out how all this works. Facebook has said something similar. Also, the at POTUS tag will go to Joe Biden. I don't think Trump's used it quite as aggressively as his real Donald Trump Twitter handle. What I think his tweets are officially considered, official pronouncements of the office of the President of the United States. So they could. I mean, it's going to be harder to prosecute him for anything he does in office. I personally think that it should not be taken as reason to not prosecute him for things done in office, for reasons I said earlier. If we accept anything he does, regardless of its legality, just because he's the president, then I think we essentially establish this as the new norm. To answer the question, yes, they could be used in evidence against him.
President Trump has refused to release his tax returns. As we saw in the campaign, the New York Times was able to get those and has been reporting what they found. What does the reporting tell you about possible crimes that the president, could be investigated for?
Well, they suggest, but don't prove, a pretty significant level of malfeasance. It seems like he has routinely misstated the value of his assets to potential lenders as opposed to tax authorities. And this is fraud. However, it's rich people have an advantage, which is that it's very hard to prosecute white collar crime unless you can prove intent. So if you file fraudulent tax returns, but you can just say my attorney filled out the forms, I signed it, I didn't, it's too complicated, I don't understand it, you can get off. And this is it's really hard to prosecute people for just this reason. So what the Manhattan District Attorney is trying to do is get not just the tax returns and not just the financial forms filed to the potential lenders, but also get the testimony and emails of the accountants. So if the accountant says, yeah, he came to me and he said, I don't want to pay any taxes, help me out, you know, that basically demonstrates intent. So there's been a lot of attention focused on efforts to get his tax returns, but the tax returns aren't enough. You need to have the context.
Let's bring in Gary in Brookfield. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Hi, Kate. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to call and say that because he is a wealthy individual and to stop the perpetuation of the thinking that wealthy individuals don't get prosecuted, powerful individuals don't get prosecuted, that's exactly the reason why he should be prosecuted, because we have so many of these conspiracy theories going around, and that's part of the underlying thinking in many of those conspiracy theories. So the reason he should be prosecuted is exactly because of that. He should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law for anything he's committed that is a crime.
Gary, thank you. Jeff Wise, you know, Gary is saying, look, people who have the means, who are privileged, should not be able to skirt the law.
Well, I think Gary really hits the nail on the head, frankly. I think he's put it more succinctly than I have. There's two problems. One is that rich people have been getting away, wealthy and powerful people have been getting away with too much for too long. And the second is that that has caused a perception that the system is rigged, an accurate perception, frankly. But as Gary points out, conspiracy theory-minded people can then take that and spin it into this idea that there's all sorts of nefarious activities, even beyond the actual nefarious activities that are going on. And there's sort of a dark irony to all this, which is that Trump and the Republican Party have taken and used these conspiracy theories to basically cover up their own actual malfeasance. So we have these kind of crazy QAnon ideas about pizza parlors and pedophile rings, while so Trump has to, our man Trump has to go in there and get rid of all these pizza eating pedophiles, but meanwhile he's just like sort of stealing everything that isn't bolted down.
Let's bring in Jody and Teresa. Jody, hi.
Hi. My question is, you know, there are 73 million people who voted for Trump. And my concern is everything that is being censored by the media, including you guys, about things that are, you're talking about prosecuting Trump on his fraud. What about Biden? I mean, there's been a lot of things that have been brought up about Biden. And nobody talks anything about it because he's protected by the mainstream media. Why is that?
Jody, thank you. And Jeff, let's look at this through that lens of, you know, what is the media here saying about these, you know, particular crimes and how they,
right,
the lens as which they show the president versus Biden?
Well, I think Jody's call is incredibly well-timed because this is exactly what we're talking about. If we have a democracy in which 45% of the population believes that Joe Biden committed crimes of an equal nature to Trump's, that is simply not a society which is able to sustain a democracy. We have such widespread misinformation. I think Jody, unfortunately, has been exposed to probably Fox News, right-wing radio, Facebook, right-wing posts on Facebook. There's such a seething mass of misinformation that is constantly being pumped out into the public. It's effectively toxic to self-governance because people cannot make informed opinions if their basis of their understanding is wrong. So to Jody's question, I would say you allude to some vague sense of criminality on the part of Biden. You have been misinformed. You have been lied to. And it's one of the things we have to address beyond the prosecution or non-prosecution of Donald Trump is, can we as a society sustain a system which regularly misinforms and inflames a large segment of the population?
As she said, though, you know, 73 million people have voted for President Trump, and we can't dismiss those people who are supporting the president.
Well, we can't dismiss them. We should be very concerned and try to understand why they voted the way that they did. And there's certainly the media have written a lot of articles about people who continue to support Trump, despite his very aggressive and in the open attempts to undermine our constitutional system of government. I think all of these articles ultimately come down to people citing misunderstandings of what's happening. People are misinformed. That is the basis of it. So the question to me is, how do we address the concerns of the 73 million people? My concern is, how do we address the misinformation that underlies the mistaken concerns of those 73 million people?
Jeff Wise, journalist, writing about possible criminal investigations surrounding President Trump and what he could face once he leaves office, as we talk with you about what you see is at stake, 800-642-1234. Karen is with us in Madison. Hi, Karen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I just wanted to say that Trump has been a poster boy for normalizing lying, which has it's part of what has been happening in our government for some time. But also the reason it's perpetuated is the media, because they make money on this. And like in the election, they made $14 billion on this election. And, you know, the media doesn't care about that. We really get the truth. I mean, that was true in the Bay of Tonkin. It was true in our run-up to the war in Iraq. There were no weapons of mass destruction. And it's true in my understanding of Fox News is that they got out of some kind of legal battles because they said they were entertainment and not news. So we need to, for the sake of all of our culture, we need to stop and say lying is wrong, even if you do it in marketing or any other form. Thank you.
And Karen, I'll add there that the Washington Post has been tallying false and misleading claims by the president, and about a month ago was recording 50 false or misleading claims a day, Jeff.
You know, Karen brings up a really critical point, which is that the public has been told that the media is corrupt. The public can see evidence of the media being corrupt. And I think it's important to understand that, like everything, like every aspect of life, people are generally trying to do a good job. But some people aren't. Some people are really listen, I'm a journalist. I get paid terribly. Most journalists get paid terribly. And we do it because we really, we feel a calling. We find it interesting to find out what's going on in the world and try to tell other people about it. But, you know, when you have someone like Fox News, which, as Karen quite rightly pointed out, they defended a court case saying, like, no reasonable person would believe that we're sincere in what we're saying. That was a defense in a libel case. We have to draw a line between good journalism and fake bad journalism, which is like Fox trying to promulgate ideas like that the election was fraudulent. This is very, very dangerous, and I think we really have to address this in a serious way. It's going to be hard because we have the First Amendment and we have our traditions, but we have to wake up and really grapple with this.
And we have to pause there with journalist Jeff Wise. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with journalist Jeff Wise. No ex-president has ever been indicted, but with President Trump's family business practices, tax returns, potential financial crimes, is this moment different? Do you think he has profited off the presidency? Is this moment ripe for a pardon, as we've been talking about? Let's go back to the phones now. John is joining us from Muskego. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. I'm just concerned that we've always been on this slippery slope, it seems, from administration to administration, from Nixon, and probably could have been way before that, just didn't do it. But when are the people going to get their representatives to focus on the work that they were sent to Washington to do and to stop just bashing each other's party legally every time somebody gets into power to move the ball in that direction? We just don't see enough action from our elected individuals because they feel like this is what they need to be doing and not legislating.
Yeah. So more governing, John is saying there. Jeff?
I mean, I think that's – listen, I think after the 4 years we've just had, I would love – I think a lot of people would love to be in a situation where we have – a government that looked more like Schoolhouse Rock, you know, where we have people, you know, thinking about what would make the world a better place, writing up legislation to affect that, and passing it and having the president sign it into law. We are a long way from that. We are in a situation in which the dynamic between the two parties is profoundly dysfunctional, and I don't think it's really in my scope for today's discussion to get into why that is, but I think maybe I would argue that perhaps we would be getting at least one small step closer to that point if we had if we could establish that the President of the United States is not a monarch.
John had also wanted to ask you timeline here. How long do these investigations take, and how do you envision a trial unfolding?
Right. So this is exactly what I wanted to get into with my article for New York Magazine, which I encourage your readers to look at. It's called The People versus Donald J. Trump. It ran on in September in New York Magazine. But basically, it takes time. I mean, for various reasons, a state-level prosecution would probably proceed faster than a federal one. We could conceivably see a trial later this year, maybe, I should say next year, 2021, perhaps 2022. It takes, you know, probably only a matter of weeks, maybe a month and a half or something like that for it to take place. I'm talking about tax fraud charges. I think probably what's going to happen is that he has committed so many crimes in so many different jurisdictions that you maybe we'll see overlapping prosecutions in different jurisdictions. So we really don't know. It kind of gets complicated, so I would refer people to the article. But, you know, you could see an indictment, you know, first half of 2021.
And you've been writing about how that state charges seem more likely to proceed than federal charges. Why is that?
Well, part of it is the issue of self-pardon that I mentioned. It seems very likely that he's going to try to pull that maneuver, and that would sort of drag things down. But also the fact that the Manhattan DA, Cy Vance Jr., has already got an investigation underway. So he might even have an indictment under seal. So he could, you know, at any point he could conceivably, reveal that this case is ongoing.
What about defamation lawsuits against the president? At least two women who have accused Trump of sexual assault out of, more than two dozen others have also filed defamation lawsuits. What have you learned there?
Right. So those are civil cases, meaning like they're not going to put him in prison. He has a lot of financial problems brewing. He has something like $400 million of debt that's coming due in the next few years. He has, various kinds of civil exposure, which, you know, E. Jean Carroll is trying to get him to deliver a DNA sample because she has a dress that she said she was wearing when he raped her. He's trying very hard to not give that DNA sample. You would think if it was going to exonerate him, he would like eagerly give that sample, but who knows? That could be a very interesting. I mean, that would be reputationally very damaging, right? If beyond the whatever money she's able to extract for the defamation, she's suing him for saying that she was lying when she accused him of having raped her. So there's not only the financial burden, but the reputational burden of being a rapist.
Jeff Wise with us, journalist who's written about the possible criminal investigations that President Trump could face once he leaves office. Taking your calls on it as well. Paula in Madison is next. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I have a question. If Trump is prosecuted and found guilty, can he still run for president in 2024, and what would that look like? Thank you.
Thank you, Paula.
Wow, that is a fascinating question. I don't, you know, it sort of boggles the mind from a practical standpoint. I mean, wow. I think I'm just going to go out on a limb here. This is not an official. I'm not a lawyer, and this is not an official statement. But I think it's. I don't think there's anything to prevent him. It's worth looking into. I mean, it definitely seems like a sort of science fiction scenario.
Derek, now in Dane County, is with us. Derek, hi.
Yeah, just wondering, the lady before the call about Biden and your guest there kind of poo-pooed it off and, you know, said something about Fox. And I think that's just, I don't know, to do that, to play her down like that. But my point is that all presidents benefit. Look at Obama's and Clinton, everybody. And which president has given his $400,000 to charity each year instead of taking a salary?
So all presidents benefit, and Derek's saying, you know, President Trump has put his salary toward, you know, toward charitable organizations.
Well, he's taken far more from self-dealing by going to his own golf courses than he has from donating his salary. I mean, Trump also has a history of saying that he's donating money, and then it turns out he actually hasn't donated that money. So, listen, he is a, you know, this kind of, what the caller is basically, you know, invoking is, I think, this kind of both sides argument that, like, well, everyone's a little bit bad, so why are you being so mean to Trump? I think we, you know, if you look at his record with a clear eye, it's very evident that he is in a completely different class to himself.
So as you look into 2021, which it seems like you're starting to live in 2021 already, what do you see as the best case scenario for what will come out of a Trump investigation or a prosecution?
I think the most important thing that could come out of a Trump prosecution is just a realization of what's been going on. We've lived in this, you know, a big chunk of this country has been living in an alternate reality bubble. And a lot of the rest of the country, a lot of the sort of the center or left-leaning part of the country has been kind of swept along where, like, it's really hard to sort of call a spade, as it were, and you know, really recognize this guy for what he's doing. I think that a prosecution would really establish clarity and simplicity in the public conception of what Donald Trump is, which is he is essentially a criminal who obtained the office of the president through malfeasance. And, you know, I draw a parallel to Richard Nixon, who was a very popular politician until Watergate. And of course, in those days, the assessment of his nature was bipartisan. Republicans joined with Democrats to say, no, this is not acceptable. You have to resign. But once he was out of office, you know, there was a big part of the country who had been really rabid, enthusiastic Nixon supporters realized the nature of what he'd been doing and turned on him. And for, you know, a generation after that, Nixon was a byword in political malfeasance. My hope is that we sort of reunify under the understanding of the nature of what Donald Trump has done to this country.
Jeff, thank you for joining us.
It's been my great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Jeff Wise, a journalist who's written about the possible criminal investigations that President Trump could face once he leaves office. We have a link to his writing at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, it is 1A. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.